Welcome into the Who's On podcast, part of the Saber Podcast Network. We had a lot going on this week. The UVA football schedule release coming out this week. Transfers talking to the media for the first time, a couple of them. We'll get into that later. But also, UVA won their first true road game of the season over Miami on Wednesday night. We were recording on Thursday morning, and I've got Chris Wright, the big man at thesaber.com, joining me here this morning to talk about all of it. Chris, how you doing?
Yeah, always good to get a basketball win. So that puts me in a good mood at least.
They're fleeting at this moment in time, but glad we could come here on a more joyous occasion this morning. But we're going to get into the basketball just a little bit later. We're going to talk football first because that's what kind of the reason we're here. 2025 UVA football schedule released earlier this week. Wanted to kind of get into it, look at it a little bit. We've known the opponents for, how long they plan out these schedules now, and especially since they did like the ACC re-release their schedule and who was going to be playing who every year. But now we know the order, and that kind of brings some new elements to it. So real quick, run it down. Home against Coastal Carolina at NC State, which is a non-conference game, not an ACC game. That schedule is not conference. Then home against William & Mary, home against Stanford, Friday night at home against Florida State. So that's four of your first five games are at home. Then you go to Louisville, and then I think the bye week slides in right there. Home against Washington State, and then at UNC, at Cal, home against Wake Forest, at Duke, and then home against Virginia Tech. That bye week is right there before Virginia Tech, which is an interesting thing. Just your initial thoughts when you saw the schedule come out earlier this week, Chris.
I mean, the main thing is Virginia's schedules always feel a little weird to me. It seems like they frequently get that odd circumstance where you get three games in a row at home, right? That feels like it's happened a handful of times over the last decade or whatever. And that's always tricky for, fans. So I always think of it that way. Like, how many fans can make three straight trips if they're not within, say, an hour radius or something like that? So, that caught your eye. The Friday Florida State game being the third of those is interesting too, right? Because it's also a Friday night game in terms of logistics on top of that for fans. So that little stretch will be interesting. I thought the second bye is very interesting to get it before Virginia Tech. I don't recall that ever happening.
I was going to say, I can't remember that. Yeah.
Right. And the SEC does things like that a lot where they schedule open dates or they schedule their William & Mary, right, the week before the rivalry games. So it'll be interesting to see if that, impacts Virginia in any way. Tony Elliott is undefeated currently out of bye weeks. So
I've had that stat texted to me many times this week.
Right. So that's the first thing Virginia fans latched onto, right? Is, oh, Coach Elliott is perfect out of a bye week, and we get Virginia Tech out of a bye week. So that will be interesting. The other bye, good that it's breaking up, after you have a whole bunch of games in a row. I would have rather had it after the Cal game. One of those, just because you go all the way to Cal and then all the way back to Wake Forest. I would think the ACC would try to give teams that travel cross country a bye. I know you can't do it for Cal and Stanford, but could you do it for the teams on the East Coast traveling west? But that's a nitpick thing. You obviously can't have two byes in 4 weeks.
Yeah. And it's interesting timing too, because it's right after the road trip to UNC. Not that that's a far trip, but just back-to-back road games. And then the second one, you got to go all the way to the West Coast. So I guess we'll find out, eventually down the line what time those games are going to be at. But it's kind of an interesting quirk in the schedule. That bye week last year, it kind of worked out so perfectly that it was kind of separated into thirds of the season. And obviously that can't always happen. I do wonder though, did UVA request the bye week before Virginia Tech, knowing how good they play out of bye weeks and kind of wanting the extra time to get ready for that game? I don't know. I would have liked to see maybe the first bye week kind of feels late in the year. Does that feel right?
I mean, six games in before you get a bye, so you play half your season, and then
especially
you have two
in a
bye
year,
weeks.
Yeah, when you have two bye weeks now. Yeah,
yeah. So that part makes it a little odd because you do have the double open dates. So it does feel a little bit late, but they play so many at home early. So I'm kind of like, well, there's not a whole lot of travel mileage in there because Louisville and Raleigh are not major
No.
trips either. So in terms of travel fatigue, it won't be as bad being that late, I don't think. But you know, it does feel a little bit late.
The travel fatigue too. I mean, last year they had a couple longish road trips, but you know, this year most of their, you know, three out of their five road games are playing down in the triangle. They're playing at NC State, at Duke, and at UNC. I don't know, I would have to look it up, but I don't know if anyone's done that recently, played all three triangle teams on the road. So at least there's not a lot of travel associated with that. And then, like you said, Louisville, that's not a bad trip. Pretty quick. And then obviously Cal, that's gonna take up most of your miles for the year on
Right.
that schedule.
I think that's the player to be named later for the basketball schedule, where
Yeah.
Virginia's been to Miami, to Dallas, and to California. Maybe this is the trade on the football end. Like, you won't travel in football because we're sending you all over the place in
I
basketball.
mean, maybe it was making up for this year because, you know, Virginia already had to go to Cal and at Stanford, and SMU. Like, I think they were, I tweeted it out at the time. I think they were one of the only schools that had to do that in the ACC this year, travel to all three of those new, not in the geographic footprint of the ACC schools. Yeah, just the bye week. What do you make of that? The second one right before Virginia Tech. I know obviously people want to talk about Tony Elliott's record coming out of a bye week. Do you like it? Do you not like it?
Independent of the stat, you know, Coach Elliott's stat being undefeated after bye weeks, I like it because Virginia often feels, at least in recent years, really like nicked up and really injured or depth concerns, things like that, by the time they get to that Virginia Tech game. And it's part of that is program problem, right? Not having enough depth, roster management, maybe you couldn't get enough people in. So part of it is on Virginia's end, but then also like, you know, how much of that is bad luck? How much, right? Like, so does having that bye week late allow you to get as many guys as possible, you know, healthy for that game, that means so much to fans, right? I think a lot of, you know, Virginia fans are frustrated with football for a lot of reasons, but I think maybe number one on the list is just how that rivalry has gone for so long now. So anything that gives you the slightest possibility of an advantage, I think Virginia fans would take it.
Yeah, and Virginia Tech will play against Miami at home the week before that. So a really big game for them, one of the biggest on their schedule. And obviously there's going to be a lot of emotion going into that game based off what happened last year between Virginia Tech and Miami with the, was it a Hail Mary? Was it an interception? You know, what was it? So that's going to be a really interesting kind of dynamic. Virginia Tech coming off of that, getting ready for, you know, the biggest rivalry game on their schedule, and then Virginia having that extra week of rest after
They
they
don't ever
get
seem to
finished.
have a problem. They don't ever seem to have a problem finding a way to get up for Virginia. So,
They'll
yes,
get
Miami will
up,
be
yeah.
difficult, but they'll find something in the tank. They always do.
They'll get up for it. And the real question is, you know, can Tony Elliott kind of keep his success coming off of bye weeks going? The first bye week of the season, they're going to face Washington State at home. So you like the chances there. We'll see what Washington State looks like. Obviously, their coach is now at Wake Forest, and Jake Dickert taking over there. That's going to be Virginia's second to last home game of the season. Looking at this most intriguing non-conference game, I know we've known them for a while, but maybe things have changed with kind of how things are scheduled. Anyone that sticks out to you out of those four?
I think you have to say NC State just because it's a
Yeah.
non-conference game and the uniqueness of it. The Washington State having a new coach, you know, maybe that's interesting, but I have a hard time like connecting with the Washington State scheduling, right? Like, I get it, I understand it. But in terms of like intrigue, not really. I mean, that feels like it's forever away and they have a new coach and who knows what they'll look like or anything like that. So, yeah, I'll say NC State for now, just because. You know, non-conference. I know they some other ACC schools have done this, but I think this is the first time Virginia's done it. So there's a little bit of interest in that. I'm curious just in general about some of these games, right? Like when you look at, you know, the other teams' records from last year, you have a whole bunch of six and sevens, which means a whole bunch of teams that made bowls but lost, right? But with the you know, the conference musical chairs in terms of players. Players move here and there and everywhere. Who knows what any of these teams are going to look like, right?
Yeah.
So until you get some like spring practice and some intel coming out of the various areas, I have a hard time wrapping my brain around any of these games, non-conference or otherwise.
It looks like, because David Teal put out this stat that Virginia's the lone Power Four team who doesn't currently have a game scheduled against a ranked team from 2024. Obviously, that's last season. Everything changes now, especially with the transfer portal between season to season. So we'll see what next year looks like. I would agree. Most interesting non-conference game's got to be that NC State game, just because it is a non-conference game. And so you kind of get, all right, a taste of the ACC play without it counting against your records, and before you play Stanford a couple weeks later. NC State, really interesting team. I like them going into last year, and they kind of, with Grayson McCall's injuries and then him retiring in the middle of the season, they went to the young quarterback and CJ Bailey, who sounds promising. But they lost a lot. Tony Gibson, their defensive coordinator, left. He's at Marshall now. Robert Anai is no longer at NC State. They let go of him. And I think Kurt Roper, former Duke offensive coordinator, is now the offensive coordinator there in NC State. So really weird year for Dave Doran in NC State. So we'll see what they look like going into next season. But they lost a lot of talent. A lot of guys on defense transferred out after Tony Gibson left. Casey Concepcion, who I really liked at NC State as a wide receiver, he's gone. But like you said, it's really hard to take stock of these rosters right now. And I'm not even sure every school in the country has their rosters updated if you go on their websites. Most interesting ACC game. I kind of looked at a couple here, but I kind of feel like it has to be that Florida State Friday night game. What is Florida State going to look like this year? Obviously, you would have loved to have played them this year. That would have been a good win. What do they look like next year? Thomas Castellanos bringing in Gus Malzahn as the offensive coordinator, and Tony White from Nebraska as defense coordinator. What is that team going to look like next year? And especially getting on a Friday night, Virginia fans of old, really, that Florida State game means a lot to them.
I mean, Florida State is the poster child of what we were talking about. Like, you don't know what you're going to get. So the year before, cruising until the quarterback gets hurt, they get left out of the four team playoff. They're preseason ranked, right, coming into last year, and then go 2-10. Now they have new coordinators and a new quarterback, and like we said the same thing about NC State. They've got new coordinators. I just think it's really hard to pick out things. Other than the Virginia Tech game, you always set that one aside. I think the Stanford and Wake Forest home games look really important to me in terms of, are you going to finally break through? You've got a lot more portal incoming, what appears to be more talent and depth on paper. You have to win your home games in conference to really like get to that bowl level, that 6-6 level. Certainly you would hope for more, right? Even if 6-6, there will be plenty of debate about how much progress that is if that's where it fell. But any conversations of 6-6 or better, I think you have to beat Stanford 3-9 last year, and you have to beat Wake Forest with a new coach 4-8 last year in your home games. Those two are really important in conference, in terms of how that the home games in the ACC stack up. So those two jump out to me, just because I think any chances of a breakthrough year or a turnaround year or whatever you want to call it, you have to win those two games.
Yeah, a lot was made last year about Virginia's home record, and obviously Tony Elliott, that was a big talking point, is have to be better at home and have to win those games. I would say the schedule this year plays out much more favorably for them at home than it did last year. Obviously, you had SMU at home last year. That's a really tough game. Louisville at home, I know they played them really tight and maybe should have won that game, but that Louisville was a good team last year. UNC decided to the one game that they were really going to focus on last year was that game against Virginia, and so that turned into a tougher game than it probably should have been. So there are some tough games on there. And then Maryland early in the year, that was just kind of like the bad time to play Maryland. It was at the beginning of the season last year. But yeah, this year, Coastal Carolina, William and Mary, Stanford, Washington State, Wake Forest, you got to win all those games. Those are the games that, like you said, those are teams that at this point, looking at it, without knowing the spring football and how these rosters are going to look come the fall, those are the games you kind of target and be like, all right, we got to win those games. There's some more toss-up games outside of that. But like, that's where you got to start. And that's why, again, here we are, another Virginia football season. Those first 4 or 5 games are going to be really important for Virginia's season and kind of the outlook of it.
Yeah, I mean, 7 home games, you have to win, I think, 5 of those to have any chance of a winning record pre-bowls, right? If you're going to go 7-5, you have to win 5 of those home games. And then that means, yes, winning 2 road games as well, which some of these road games are intriguing in terms of those teams. I think the road schedule looks way harder than the home schedule. So you definitely need to hold serve at home against some of those teams. I don't think there's any question about that.
Road-wise, that trip to UNC, I mean, I've been waiting to see when that was going to fall on the schedule because I think everyone wants to see just what this North Carolina team looks like this year under Bill Belichick and all everything that kind of came with that this offseason. It's been the biggest headline, I think, of the offseason, is North Carolina landing Bill Belichick. And I think there's like a while there where every week it was coming out, oh, Bill Belichick's going to leave and go to the NFL. He's not actually going to coach a game in North Carolina, but he signed the contract now and the details have come out. So looks like he will be there.
He's Peyton and Eli's co-host, right? Isn't that who he is?
Yeah, that guy also makes frequent appearances on the Pat McAfee show. I'm like, the amount of publicity that UNC football gets on a daily basis because it, whether it's Pat, it, whether it's Bill Belichick or Mike Lombardi on the Pat McAfee show making weekly appearances, it seems like, or obviously when the Manning cast was going on, he was still going on there, and he's not slowed down on the TV appearances, it feels like.
Just well, and it's really smart from a recruiting standpoint, I
Oh,
think.
for
But
sure.
it's fascinating because it's just a clear indicator of time marches on, right? Like the 10, 12-year-olds or younger, he's the co-host of the Manning cast. He's not Patriots Super Bowl co, right? Like unless they pulled up Wikipedia or something, right? And middle school boys, I'm sure, through whatever random video they've seen or random thing they've read, may have some sort of inkling who he is.
Maybe.
I mean, I think a lot of people probably know who Tom Brady is because you'll get random highlights. You don't get random coaching highlights, right? So,
I'd like to see the highlight reel for
right, that would
that
be fascinating. Anyway, I just think it's interesting that, yes, like I'm sure he can, like Al Groh did when he got to Virginia, he can wear the Super Bowl rings when he's in a recruiting meeting. But yeah, it'll be intriguing to see what that team looks like.
though. Yeah, especially in year one, just kind of how does he shape everything? And obviously he's bringing in a lot of guys with NFL coaching experience, not as much college coaching experience. I know Freddie Kitchens, his offensive coordinator, and Steve Belichick, his son, the defensive coordinator, they both coached college football last year, but that's a hand like not even a handful of experience there between those two guys. Way too early predictions. Just what do I put it this way? What do you think Virginia needs to do this year?
Needs to do for what? Fan
Just
interest, coach
fan
safety,
interest, coach,
hot
yeah,
seat. Like, what are we talking
all of
about?
it, yeah. I'll wrap it all in a bow and tie it up.
Because you could go a million ways with that question, right? So, I tend to look at things from the fan lens, because of the Sabre is a fan website, right? So, I think anything under 7 wins, I think most fans would still be apathetic, mostly uninterested. And yes, that I understand that 7-5 would be the first bowl game since that they've actually played in since 2019. Obviously they qualified for a couple and didn't play, but yeah, I think it would take more than that. I think it takes at least 7. I think anything under that, fans will still be, well, I don't know. I thought we brought in all this. I heard about all these transfers. 19 guys came in. Like I thought we did this. I thought we did that. And they don't ever relate that to how other teams in the conference did in the transfer portal, right? You do have coaching stability, right? No changes going into the spring. Some fans see that as stability can be a good thing. I'm sure some fans see that as well. You like those rankings have been sort of mediocre on both sides of the ball in terms of national rankings. So, I just think there's a lot of road to cover still to get Virginia fans back on board with football, but I do think there's more interest this offseason, December, January, than I remember in a while. Fans are at least somewhat engaged. So there's signs that if you can create a little something, if they get to 7 or 8 or 9 wins, you might be able to then stack some NIL dollars multiple years back to back, right? All of that's still in play. And of course, the big one that hangs over everything, the house settlement, right? Roster sizes, all of that is still kind of out there. We'll have to see how all that plays out too.
On fan interest right now, couple things with that. I think the big donation kind of perked everyone up a little bit. I think people started paying attention again and are like, okay, maybe this isn't gonna be horrible. Two is actually getting some of those names in here. A Chandler Morris at quarterback and Monroe Mills from Louisville, who's their 4-star transfer portal recruit. But the biggest one to me, why there's so much fan interest right now is the basketball product is nothing to watch right now. So you're just like, well, I can't really take any joy in that anymore. So where do I turn my attention? Oh, football's like doing something right now. So let me go look at that. Plus, I think as an NBA fan, I've kind of realized for a while now, and college football has kind of done this too, is the most fan interest is not during the championship. It's not during the playoffs. It's during the off season. It is during free agency and now obviously the transfer portal in college football. And I think that's like, 'cause it's the unknown, it's the potential of things. It's, oh, look at this guy we got, look at that guy we got. It's constantly something happening. And I think that is those are the reasons I think there's so much more fan interest in football. And I don't think any of that's wrong. I think that's Yeah, absolutely. I would be paying more attention to football too, and I honestly have because that's been the better thing to write about and cover lately.
It's like golf betting, right? Would you, so the Masters comes up, would you take these two golfers or would you take the field? Well, when you get to championship time, do you want to pay attention to those two teams who aren't you? Or do you want to look at the hope that you can pull out of the portal to create hope for your team? That makes a lot of sense, right? Like once it gets to championship time, there's only 2 to 4 teams that are still engaged in the current season, full time. Everybody else was like, well, how can we get to be them, a year from now?
Yeah, absolutely. All right. We got our first impressions of the transfers yesterday. Six of them came and talked to the media. That was quarterback Chandler Morris, the offensive lineman Monroe Mills, Brady Wilson from UAB, and Tyshawn Wyatt from JMU. Also had receivers Jamal Edrin from Purdue and Cam Ross from JMU as well. Got a chance to talk to them, get our first impressions. But before we get to that, Notre Dame receiver Jaden Thomas became the latest commit, and probably the last one. Now that they went over the deadline to get players, enrolled into classes and everything, just because Jaden Thomas and Mitchell Melton, the edge rusher from Ohio State, were playing in the national championship game. So they kind of made a special exception for them. And talking to director of recruiting, Justin Sparrows, on Wednesday about that, he kind of talked about and explained the situation with admissions and kind of the chaos of getting that.
That was certainly a new one. National championship being so much later, January 20th, and then still having guys on the hook in that game. Thankfully, our admissions process, special shout out to all the folks associated with that process. They allowed for a little bit of grace there to allow for some of these folks to enroll a week past the deadline. And when we mentioned to them that they were playing a national championship game, they were understanding of it.
Getting Jaden Thomas in here, another big body receiver that completes the trade. I know people joke with for Malachi Fields. Another name to throw into that wide receiver room where, obviously they lose Fields. How do you think that room's kind of shaping up now that you see Jaden Thomas in there?
I assume graduate student probably helped with admissions. There's less classes to get enrolled in when you're a graduate student.
Both him
And
and Melton, yeah.
right, I'm sure some fans don't still aren't comfortable with the academic marriage with big time athletics. But graduate students often don't have to take the full 12, 15 credit hours, right? So it's a little easier to get those guys in late than it would be maybe a junior or something like that. But The wide receiver room is interesting to me because you're going to need somebody, whether it's one of the handful of returners or one of these guys, to be the number one receiver. And it doesn't have to be Malik Washington, number one receiver. It would be great if it is, but it wouldn't have to be that. But you do need someone who the defense has to really account for all the time. So whether that's Terrell Harris, who was limited this year, but looked pretty good in the four games he played, injury taking away the other games. Is it an Andre Green, one of the exciting transfers from a year ago, or one of these guys, Jaden Thomas, Cam Ross, whoever among the receiver room as a whole? With that said, there is more proven depth at receiver, it feels like to me. There are multiple guys on both the transfer list and because of Terrell Harris, et cetera, coming back that have made catches in games, who do have multiple 100-yard seasons, that sort of thing, depending on which guy you're talking about. So they do have good depth there, but you need somebody to be the dude, the number one guy that can get defenses to roll to them.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned the depth piece because last year it felt like they had the depth finally at wide receiver to rotate a couple guys in there. But by the end of the season, you're looking out there and Eli Wood and Ethan Davies are out there blocking and trying to be pass catchers. And it's like, well, where did all that depth that we were talking about before the season go? So that's good to see. I totally agree with you. I think that's still my biggest thing with Malachi Fields gone. Who kind of develops into that number one guy? I think they have a lot of faith that if Terrell Harris can stay healthy, it will be him. But I've also kind of, and I said this on on one of our recent podcasts with Greg and Jackie about the most underrated guy in the class. I think is Jamal Edgerrin, the guy from Purdue. He had a really productive freshman year at FAU, and then transferred to Purdue. And I don't know if you caught any Purdue games this year or just looked at them. They were a dumpster fire. And Jamal, I asked him kind of about that situation. And without those certain words, he kind of alluded to, yeah, it was a mess there last year, Purdue, one of the worst Power Four teams in the country last season. So kind of getting him back. And he talked about, development was kind of the biggest thing for him coming to UVA, seeing what Adam Mims has done, seeing what they've done in the past, going back to Marcus Hagans when he was the receivers coach and, the guys they produce. I think they showed him a lot of Malachi Fields film when they came in because Edgerrin's kind of a bigger body guy like Fields. Dontavian Wicks was another guy I'm sure they showed some film of. So I think he can turn into something. And then obviously Jaden Thomas is a guy that comes in with a lot of experience from Notre Dame. So I really like how that receiver room has filled out. I would have loved if they could have kept Malachi Fields, but obviously they weren't expecting to keep him. And now he's up at Notre Dame where it looks like they'll have another good team next year.
These receivers have something to prove, the transfer receivers. So, Power Four stage to try to prove that is, I think, probably part of what's attractive to these guys because there are snaps available. So, if you're looking at, all right, I've got NIL offers from here, there, and XYZ, but where can I also, maybe prove that I'm an NFL possible prospect? Whether that's a 1 year guy or 2 year guys, depending on who has the eligibility. But you look at someone like Jaden Thomas, right? Like, was a starter at Notre Dame, but then injuries, et cetera, didn't more of a reserve role this year. But can he come in and say, hey, like, see, this is what I can do with opportunities, right? So that comes to mind with him. He's also like, you got some versatility there, 6'2", 218. You look at Dakota Twitty, who used to be a receiver who's a tight end. You can line those guys up as a stand-up tight end, right, tight to the line. It gives you some versatility where they're in a tight end spot, but they're technically a receiver. So I think, Thomas is interesting from that standpoint. Cam Ross, I think, is very interesting because I don't think he had a great year at JMU and in terms of the expectations compared to his time at UConn. So does he find a better fit or better groove or whatever here in this offense with Chandler Morris theoretically being the one that's throwing the football? Once we see how the competition goes, but is he a guy that has a lot to prove? Like contract a year, basically, if you're going to get pro football dollars, that this is the time you have to maybe prove that. And we saw Malik Washington take advantage of that. Now, he was really conscientious, like pro. locked in on all sides of the house. So, it's unfair to compare anyone to that. But if someone can catch that lightning in a bottle and they something to prove year, that would bode well for Virginia.
Yeah, I think Greg picked him as his most underrated player in this portal class, Cam Ross. I don't know if I see it at wide receiver, but definitely in the kick return game. Like all the hype that Chris Tyree got going into last year for kick returning, punt returning, and all that, and it never kind of manifested. I wonder if Cam Ross, who comes in with a lower profile than Chris Tyree, if he can actually make an impact there.
That will
Because
depend on the blocking.
that would also, yeah, depend on that.
Some of Chris Tyree's not getting free had a lot, very little to do with him.
Helps if you catch the ball too. Helps if you
Yep.
catch the ball. So we'll see kind of what develops there. I know Cam Ross said that kind of they were telling him like the return game is completely open. It's up for grabs. There's no leaders there. And I think obviously after what we saw last year, that's probably the right call from the coaching staff to kind of leave it open. And they usually leave that to the fall anyway. They don't really practice that as much in the spring. I wonder if that changes this year because of the issues they had. But yeah, that's usually something that they kind of wait on. Last thing on football, Chandler Morris, he was kind of the guy I think a lot of people wanted to talk to. And he came away with a quote that has now gone all over social media. So let me play that real quick for you.
I want to win the conference championship. That's something I told them first day, team meeting room in this room right here. I stood up, told them I want to win the conference championship. I didn't come all the way to Virginia as a Texas boy to win 5, 6 games. So that's my goal coming all this way.
So Morris coming in big expectations. He wants to, he wants to win a lot more. He wants to win a championship in the ACC. High expectations. You love to see it from players. Just it's good quotes, but it's also sets kind of, they're not settling for the 6 wins or anything like that. And talking from some of the other players, he helped recruit Monroe Mills, Tyshawn Wyatt, Jamal Edrin, and others because his thing was he wanted to come in early, figure out his school, sign with them, and start getting out on the recruiting trail, texting guys and hitting them up and trying to bring them in. And guys have said just in winter workouts already, it's only been a few weeks, a few days that they've been doing these workouts, and he's high energy. All over the place, kind of reminds you of another UVA quarterback, but maybe a more mature version of that quarterback.
January excitement is easy, right? You
Yes.
just got here. It's new. You still have the paycheck excitement, right? Like you just signed this big dollar deal or whatever. Fancy new facility, right? You got this gorgeous building. You got the fancy weight room and all of that's pretty easy. Once you get to late winter workouts, spring football, when you're playing through spring break, summer workouts when it's hot, preseason, right? Then once you lose a game, that's when it gets real.
Yeah.
So like I appreciate it. He said everything he should have said.
Yeah.
I have no issues with what he said. That's what you're supposed to say. They even said that last year, right? Like, oh, we were picked to finish last in the conference. Well, we'll go out and show them. Remember those fall preseason talks that we had in the indoor facility with players? Oh yeah, we're gonna Yeah, we'll prove them wrong. And they kind of did. They didn't finish last, but
Yeah.
you're saying all the right things, right? But now you have to do all the hard work, not the easy work on the front end.
Yeah, it's it. Nothing should too much should be taken to this. It's passing the first test. Like you checked off that first media appearance and you said the right things and people are like, all right, keep going. Now you gotta get through winter workouts, then you gotta get through spring football and kind of show some of those flashes still and get to the fall and then it's game time and get going from there. But
You don't have to convince us. It's not the
yeah.
media or the fans or whoever. So you're saying that to the camera. It doesn't really matter what the people on the other side of that camera think, the people
Yeah.
viewing the video. What matters is can he get the locker room to believe that a championship is possible? And that's way more powerful if the players can convince themselves of that, regardless of what Tony Elliott says about building the program, construction phase, model program, all of that. All of that's awesome. He's doing his job. But the players, they're the ones that decide, is it real? Is it realistic that we could actually chase an ACC championship game appearance, right? Like, SMU coming in last year, I think a lot of people knew they would be good, but they also wondered how they would hold up, right? How would they hold up in a power conference? Blah, 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 blah. Then they went out and proved it. And they had a lot of transfers as part of that mix. So somebody in that locker room at SMU last year, among those transfers, among the returnees, said, yeah, we can do it. And then they believed it. So we'll see if that's the part that will be told over time.
And obviously the early signs are, he's kind of really galvanized the locker room, it seems like. And it was interesting asking Jamal Edrian, what are the reasons that you picked UVA? When did you realize kind of they were all in? And he said it was when number four signed. Like that's kind of why UVA was like, we gotta figure out the quarterback first, and then we'll get to the rest of the transfer class. I know people were getting worried about, all right, who are we getting on the offensive line? Well, it was all kind of a plan. Like, you gotta get the quarterback first, and then everything else can go from there. And obviously Chandler having a big part in recruiting a lot of those guys to come to UVA. That's how it kind of played out. So we'll see. The positive signs are there. We've heard this story before. And I keep going back to what Tony Covington said on the podcast back in December of, can Chandler Morris be Tony Elliott's Bryce Perkins? Well, we'll see. Time will tell. Kind of how that plays out. But let's get into some basketball coming up after the break here on the Who's On podcast. Welcome back into the Who's On podcast, part of the Sabre Podcast Network. I got Chris Wright from thesabre.com here joining me today. And we're coming to you after a UVA basketball win. It's a rare sight, beating Miami 82-71. That's the most points Virginia has scored in a game this season and the most that they've scored in a game dating back to last December against Syracuse when they scored 84. Also, the first true road win of the season. The big storyline in this one, just going into the game, was that their second and third leading scorers in Elijah Saunders and Andrew Rohde were not going to be playing. But obviously big nights from Tane Murray, career high 20 points and 7 assists, and Isaac McNealy with 26 points. Just overall thoughts watching that game last night. I don't think there was a big viewership for ESPNU last night with two of the teams at the bottom of the barrel in the ACC, but I think it showed that there's at least levels to this in the basement of the ACC.
Curious where all those t-shirts that were on the back of the seats that you could see in the background there last night. I'm curious who they gave those to, because there was nobody in the building. And I know fans were joking about it beforehand. Even with fees, some of the lower level seats were like, bleacher seats at Yankee Stadium or something, like $5, $8, whatever. So crazy low. And you saw that no one bought them because there were t-shirts behind the benches there on the seat back. But the biggest takeaway for me was all it takes is really hot shooting to make yourself look good. So two guys go 10 of 18 from three. That's 30 points right out of the gate statistically. That makes life a lot easier, right? So, all those games where they score in the 50s, right? You don't have that sort of explosion. They've had a bunch of games where they made six or more threes, but when you get to 11 made threes, that's a lot of points in a game, and it does open up other things. So that, I do think that helped Blake Buchanan get going. I also think some of those missed shots that he kept alive, and then you kick it out. Lots of little pieces to why that explosion happened, but it's similar to the Villanova game back earlier this season. When you get that hot, it makes the game a lot easier, and it makes you look a lot better.
Yeah, what's that old saying? Fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice. Yeah, like whatever that saying is, because like this has been the same thing that we've seen with this Virginia team all year. Is, go back to that Villanova game where they shot pretty well from that. Or at least Isaac McNealy shot pretty well in that game, and you're like, all right, well, yeah, like this is a recipe here. And then obviously you don't shoot that well every game, and then against Boston College you do it again, and it's like, well, no, like. That's kind of the same thing. And then Miami, you're like, okay, yeah, well, this is the blueprint. That's how they do well, is they have a good shooting night against some bad competition. But yeah, promising signs, seeing a couple different lineups that we're not used to. I thought Blake Buchanan, like you said, he was good. 16 points, 9 rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds. Really good inside there. Tane Murray, obviously, we mentioned Isaac McNealy. Those three guys, who I'm now referring to as the Virginia Big Three, combined for 75% of UVA's points last night. Not a whole lot going off the bench. Ishan Sharma and Anthony Robinson and TJ Power are the only three guys that they had off the bench available. They just the numbers are not there. Normally that would have been concerning, but again, I think there are levels to this in the basement. And for Virginia, I think this is an important win because now you have wins over NC State, Boston College, and Miami. Who are the three teams below them in the ACC standings at this point? Boston College, NC State, and Miami. So they have wins over those three teams. So if you get
Tiebreakers if it
to
comes to that.
a tiebreaker to get into the ACC tournament, if you need it towards the end. So that in that sense, it is good. But I'm not sure this game really tells us much more. Would you change anything lineup wise, seeing them play without Andrew Roddy or Elijah Saunders, or just go right back to those two guys when they get back in?
That's always a tricky question from a coaching perspective, right? Because there are different levels of trust you have in guys for various reasons when you're making those decisions. I do think it's fun to hypothesize, did having less people available help the coaching staff, right? Like in terms of a lot of this season, the rotations has been, well, who's going to do what on a given night, right? It's been very inconsistent who might have a big game. Well, when you have less pieces to guess about, then you have to dole out minutes to the ones that are available. So you had five guys play 24 minutes or more last night. I think that just makes it easier, right? Like you don't have choices, right? So Anthony Robinson, you're going to play 10 to 12 to 15 minutes as a post sub. All right. Now we've got one obvious thing figured out. McNeely and Murray, because of who's available, you're going to play 35 plus. Well, now we got three pieces figured out, right? I just think it makes it way easier as a coaching staff. Is that why they played well? I don't necessarily think so, right? You mentioned Miami's bad. Miami bottom 20 in the country in 3-point opponent percentage, bottom 20 in the country in points per possession allowed. They do allow everybody to have good offensive nights, right? So I'm not sure that that's cause and effect here, but I do think playing a lot of minutes maybe helped guys like Buchanan, like Day-Day Ames, like Murray, because they know they're going to be playing those minutes. They can be a little more relaxed or a little more, whatever, productive because you have more minutes to be productive. And one guy I think don't want to overlook a little bit. I thought Kofi Coffey was really good last night. 9.7 rebounds, kind of danced around foul trouble at times, but was physical, right? Like, yeah, I just thought it was a very solid game for him as a freshman on the road, having to play well to allow those other three to flourish. I always think it's sneaky when you don't get to double figures, people kind of overlook it. But 9 and 7 is pretty daggone good.
He actually had, I think, their third best offensive rating last night. He had a quietly really productive game for them. Like what you see, 9 rebounds or 9 points, 7 rebounds, a couple assists, just kind of active down there. Miami is they're just really bad. I really
Yeah, they
hate
just don't play
to
any defense at all.
no defense, and it's just kind of how many shots does Matthew Cleveland get up? Is really all they're playing right now. He had 27 last night, but he also had 17 field goal attempts, and no one else on the team had double digit field goal attempts. So it's really just all him right now. And
I would
I
say
think.
that part is the little bit maybe concerning part, right? You won the game, but that's another guy that's gone for 20 plus. So, and that's happening regularly, right? So on a night where the other team is playing defense, you again, right? So it's just and I know he's high volume in this game, but he's just the latest. I think he's the seventh or eighth off the top of my head who scored 20 plus points this season. So just something
Marcus
to
Burton.
back of the head, right?
Marcus
Like,
Burton, Notre Dame, Maxime Raynaud, Andrei Stojakovic. I think he was pretty close. So there's been a couple guys. I don't get overly worried about the individual guy getting a lot of points. It's when it's the team aspect and everyone's kind of getting shots, they're moving the ball around. That's when I get really concerned because even against Notre Dame, I know Burton scored a lot, but they were moving the ball really well. And Virginia's defense just seemed to get tangled up in the paint, and like guys were running into each other, trying to get over screens and get out to people. And that's kind of
those
what.
problems were still there last night.
Oh, yeah,
Miami had
for
a whole
sure.
lot of easy looks last night.
Absolutely. I mean, this is the first time Virginia's won a game when they allow the opponent to score over 70 points this season. So yeah, defense, the defensive problems were not fixed last night. They just ran into a really bad Miami team that has no interest in playing any defense. I mean, some of the looks that Isaac McNealy was getting off of, those screens, like it's like, have you never heard of the mover blocker offense before? Because it's not revolutionary, but that's all they're doing.
They finally switched for, they started switching on defense for little stretches there, and that bothered Virginia a little
Yeah.
more. But that's kind of been the formula for several years. If you have the athletes to do it, is just switch on the blocker mover stuff and make them feed the post or make them curl or whatever. The Miami just wasn't interested in doing that repeatedly last night.
I will make a point that I talked about this with Cuts from the Corner earlier this week. Virginia's defensive efficiency is 181st in the country right now. That's their lowest ranking since the Dave Leto era. Bill Courtney was now the interim coach, was one of those assistants during the Dave Leto era. So defense, not their strong suit. But
Now,
I think
Luke
that.
Neer and I talk a lot about that on the Cavalier Countdown pregame show, is that this team just doesn't get in and out of pack line spots
Yeah.
very well at all. Though they can get to a pack line spot, but getting to it and getting back out of it to the next spot, they have a lot of trouble with.
Yeah, and that's what I've been saying with Anthony Robinson is like he figures out the first thing that he has to do, but you come at him with the second move or something or a second screen or whatever, that's when everything kind of just blows up, and that's what he's still trying to learn as a young player. Virginia Tech on Saturday. Any feelings on that? They got a win over Florida State, so both Virginia teams got a win in the Sunshine State last night. I've been saying it, I probably have said it too much now, but I don't think this Virginia Tech team is very talented, but I think Mike Young is that good of a coach that he's at least getting some wins out of that roster right now.
I think if there's any maybe like I'll peak type of interest from both fan bases who are just kind of weathering this season, these two games might make or break how fans at least have a little bit of good or bad feelings, or maybe they split and
Yeah.
everybody's in the middle and they have mediocre feelings about it. But these two games do feel kind of the ones that fans really hope that their team wins. Well, I don't, both sides, who's
Yeah.
anarchy, right? Like, so from that standpoint, I think, like really interesting game Saturday. I don't think ticket sales based on the secondary market looked great. So you might have, you know how Virginia Tech fans are about Virginia. So you might have a decent presence in the building from Hokie fans. We'll see. But yeah, it'll be interesting, right? Like both teams want to do some things to free guys up flying off of different screen type actions. Virginia, it's mover blocker. Virginia Tech does a lot of handoffs into a ball screen or a ball screen into a handoff and catch and shoot. So there's lots of things that will challenge both teams to stay with shooters. It may come down to can somebody get hot, right? That's what happened last night. Virginia got hot, and that helped them win the game. And I think that's the formula for this team, right? So teams that can take that away, that chase McNealy everywhere, that crowd the 3-point line, have had a lot of success against Virginia. Teams that don't, have had a little bit more trouble with it. So can Virginia get enough 3-point volume and then shoot a decent percentage? Feels like the formula for this game and any other one you want to pick on the schedule.
All right. Well, that's going to wrap it up for us. We will have coverage after that game. We'll have some more stuff coming up on the Who's On podcast next week. Chris, thanks for joining. Remember to check out thesaber.com for everything going on. We have some great content coming up for football and also baseball season just around the corner. So be sure to check that out. Also, follow the and subscribe to the Who's On podcast on Apple, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. And we will see you next week here on the Who's On podcast.